You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Good morning to you. The Dan Patrick Show. We are on Fox Sports Radio. Last show of 2009. Good morning to you, Rob. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Doug. What's going on, my man?
I'm kind of laughing and chuckling and maybe crying at the same time because every day does feel the same, right? And some of it is, in fairness, when you're in Southern California, that does happen, right?
Yes.
But just the idea that we're not on complete lockdown, but we're on some form of kind of lockish down or whatever, and with everything circling, looking like we got a couple more weeks of bad before maybe it turns to good, hopefully. God, what a weird year. Right?
Doug, I'm with you. It's just, I don't even know. I just want to erase it and move forward. And for me, I'm a guy, you know this, Doug, I love to travel. I love to be around people.
Yes.
You know, I went to Antarctica last year.
Honestly, like, selfishly, I didn't even think of that when I brought it up with you. But now I think of it, I'm like, yeah, that's like your biggest, your claim to fame is you've been to every continent
right
on Earth.
And I love to travel and stuff and to be, you know, basically locked down where you can't go. The only place I've been really this past year is I go to Las Vegas just for a change of scenery, Doug, you know, and have dinner with a couple of friends. I mean, that's really all I'm doing. And so
well, you're also really old. You're like sneaky old is part of the deal.
Right? Doug, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
January 6th will be 35 years I've been in the media. Is that, I can't even, 35 years I've been doing this, and I'm pretty proud of it. I love what I do. I still enjoy it every day, but I can't believe, I was the kid when I started working at the Daily News in New York. I was 22 years old, and Bill Gallo, the famous late great cartoonist in the sports department, used to call me the kid, and now 35 years later.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's I'm working on, it'll be, I guess, 19 years in this thing. And it is interesting because I still consider myself a young dude, right? But like,
you've been around for a long time, almost two decades. Think about that. And worked everywhere.
Right. And then I remember, and I look back and I see pictures. It's like, man, I was really young. I used to be the youngest guy.
Right.
And, but the erasing of a year is also interesting because there are moments, there's really only one, there's one sports year that I don't know much about. And then there's one NCAA tournament that I don't know much about just because I was overseas. Well, maybe two sports years I don't, like when you play overseas, once when you play professional sports,
right,
you're not really, you're not watching sports. You're just not. It's one of the, you even your own sport, you know some of it, but it's not like you're sitting down watching a game. You're just not. And you're definitely not watching collegiate sports or another sport. You just don't have the time, the bandwidth, and really the desire. It doesn't make you any less of a sports fan.
No, right.
Right. Like, I can't tell you, and I can tell you very little about the NBA when I played college basketball. So there's like a, probably like a 7-year span there where I know about the NFL because on Sundays we get together and there's nothing going on in a college town. College football I know a bunch about from that period of time. But NBA basketball and I guess Major League Baseball we watched. So like that was back during the home run chase, McGuire and Sosa.
Right. That was very memorable because there used to be cut-ins, if you remember. ESPN would cut in.
I remember watching every at bat at the end of that season with my college friends. Like it was the thing, right? It was the thing.
No doubt.
But there were lots of playoff series where like I just didn't have the bandwidth of the time then. And when you play overseas, when I played in Israel, it's almost like being in the United States in terms of the channels that you're watching. But again, you just don't have the time to watch on a nightly basis. You just more watch highlights, which I guess is how people watch it. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, there's no real, this is a weird year, but But it hasn't, and it's been a very cool sports year because we have had, I mean, selfishly here in Los Angeles, we have two championship teams, right? Dodgers and Lakers, and you don't have to give those back. But this has been almost a calendar year of the pandemic. You know, we're talking, what, March?
Just about, right. Just about an entire year, right.
Yeah, so, and it gets credit for the whole year, and now it's coming to an end, and it's like, you want to erase some of the boredom and being locked down, and obviously all of these deaths are terrible. On the other hand, like, hey, there were some great accomplishments in sports, but how do we measure them up with the other accomplishments in sports, which happen when the world is wide open? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I do get it. And the other thing is, I think of all the things that happened this year, which was probably the most shocking, was how TV viewing of sports, Doug, went down. Like people were home with nothing to do. Everybody thought it would be a ratings bonanza, right? Oh, my God, I'm home. I can't go anywhere. I got all these games on. And then some of the ratings were god-awful. And you just said, wait a minute, what happened? Like, shouldn't it have been great? But it wasn't. It wasn't as great as it could have been or you thought it would be.
Well, I mean, I think the election took some of that, right? I mean, election took a bunch.
Yeah.
Took a good amount of the numbers.
I still say that LeBron James being a part with winning with the Lakers and his third franchise, right? Leading three different franchises to a championship, kind of historic. Most of the time, people want to watch stuff like that. And for him to be a part of the lowest rated NBA finals ever is still a little surprising to me.
Okay, so what do you think's behind that?
I don't know. I don't know because I don't think it's the whole Black Lives Matter, which a lot of it was pinned on, you know, that people, they don't want politics in their sports and this and that. And, you know, that was the narrative. But the NFL didn't go down, and they also embraced it. They didn't go down as big as the NBA did. I don't know. I really don't know what happened. But the ratings are up this year so far. I know it's only the first 2 weeks of the season, so...
But they're way down for Christmas Day.
Was it way down?
Way down on Christmas Day.
What's going on then? I mean, everybody.
Well, I mean, like I I don't.
Because the election's over, right?
No,
I mean,
well,
it's Christmas.
Did you ever read The Tipping Point, the Malcolm Gladwell book?
No.
Idea that The Tipping Point is, you know, it's like where is the point where something becomes a trend or a trend kind of ends? And instead of there being a tipping point, there are a multitude of factors. And I don't think it's one thing. I think it's a bunch of things. I think there's a little LeBron fatigue, right? I mean,
I got it. 18 years of hearing LeBron, that can wear on you, no doubt.
It's not just the 18 years of it. It's in the last 10 to 12 years. Like, when did Cool Pizza become First Take? When was that?
That was about 2006, because I was there when we left New York and moved up to Bristol to do that.
Okay.
I say, yep, 2006.
So roughly the last 15 years, you've had these debate shows, and he's been one of the most debated, if not the most debated
athlete. That's a good point.
So it becomes, it's one thing, you just get like, dude, I can't do it anymore. I can't do. And then I think, you know, to this point, there's no urgency in games. There's never any urgency in NBA games, but they just, you know, Christmas Day, there was no urgency. And the NBA just finished like 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Like, you gotta
71
give me...
days ago. And Doug, you know this as a player on that caliber level. Was that enough time? Because we've seen some pretty bad games to start the season. We'll talk about that later on in the show.
I don't know. I don't know if it's, again, like, I don't think it's one factor. I think there's a bunch of different factors. But I think the fact we did get used to having sports kind of on TV, and there was great excitement at first, and then you're just like, yeah, I don't know. And then I think the election just kind of wore us all out. To be completely honest, you're like,
there's no doubt about it.
I'm good. I need a chance to breathe. And football continues to be a better watch even now without fans. Football is a better watch. It's weird. And maybe it's how
basketball's not as good of a watch now, especially when we're not watching from the bubble, which was kind of like just had a little different feel to it. Now you see Staples Center and Madison Square Garden, these places, you know, just empty, and it just doesn't feel the same. Fans matter. How about, you know, fans matter? They really do. It enhances your watch and the game.
Yep. No, I think that's a great way to put it. It enhances your watch. This is the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio, brought to you by Mercedes AMG Driving Performance. I got a bunch of things to get to. Let me start with this. Okay, so here we are, week 17 of the NFL, and a team who is in playoff contention still doesn't really know who their finishing quarterback is, right? Like, it's a... And on the surface, I love the idea of, hey, if Tua isn't playing well, why do we have to continue to play him if we have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who can come in and give us a change of pace and use his 37-year-old incredibly experienced brain and find a way to just score a touchdown and put us ahead? We've tried it twice. It worked once. It's one of those things where you and I have watched enough basketball, or you're a baseball savant. It's like, look, if the starting pitcher, the only the difference in baseball and basketball is if you take a guy out, you can't put him back in.
Right, exactly.
Well, you can if you put him in left field or whatever, but you can't really put a guy back in. In basketball, you take a guy out, you put him back up in, the backup play is good. If not, you put the starter back in. In football, no one ever does that. It's like it's more about somebody's emotion.
But do you know why, Doug? People always say this. When you have two girlfriends, neither one is any good. Like that's why you have two. So the two quarterback thing, to me, never works, because it just tells you there's a deficiency there. I don't know how many teams have ever won. The Cowboys had two quarterbacks, didn't they? Well, this is even before my time. But not too many, not often, have having two and interchanging them have worked. If it did, then I think that more people would do that. I just think that you need to focus in on one guy and see if this guy can play. If he makes a bad throw or an interception, you take him out. Then if the other guy throws an interception or fumbles, you take him out. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't ask somebody to be perfect or not to make any mistakes. That's part of the game.
Yeah, I agree. But to me, it speaks to something larger and something I wonder, right? Because here we are in the NFL where, you know, classically players have long stated, not for long. Do you think they like, no, maybe better yet, do you think they love what they have in Tua?
No, I don't believe that, because we see all the other young quarterbacks getting tossed in and being allowed to succeed or fail. And the idea that Fitzpatrick, who often turns into Fitzpumpkin, and we've seen this guy, he's been on 19 teams in 19 years. I know I'm exaggerating, but he's been all over the place. I'm misspeaking. I don't think he's ever been to the playoffs. Is that right?
Who? Fitzpatrick?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
He's been in the league all these years, never been to the playoffs, but Miami, for whatever reason, is buying into him in that he's going to lead you somewhere or do something. Tua's your prize possession, your first round pick, you know, the guy who came with an injury, but came with a lot of accolades in college, and people loved this guy, and he had it, and yet some journeyman quarterback is the guy you're looking to. I think it's a mistake, but it tells you that they don't believe in Tua.
I don't know if it tells you he doesn't believe in, like, here's the thing. The difference in most of the young quarterbacks, I mean, the Justin Herbert, obviously he's played great. And I don't think for a second that if they were in a similar situation, you would take Justin Herbert out here in year one and put Tyrod Taylor, who has been to the playoffs. I don't know that for a fact, but I don't think. But what it signifies to me is that they're not in love, right? They're in like... And they're like, man, you know, he's been great. He's a great kid. We've communicated it. All that stuff sounds great. But people were last time this year before he got hurt, so a year and a couple months ago, and you go back 2 years ago, and there was tank for Tua. And what we had been told is, yeah, he's not that big, and maybe his arm's not that strong, and maybe he's not that fast, But you know what? This guy is a football savant. This guy is a genius. This guy can manipulate safeties with his mind like he's a Jedi. And while the measurables don't pop, they don't jump off the chart, neither does the you're getting with a Ryan Fitzpatrick is a more advanced football IQ, which obviously experience gives you, but it has to signify to anybody reasonable that they like him, but they don't love him, because if they loved him, they would ride or die with him, and he is not their ride or die. That is very obvious.
Nope, I agree, and if I'm Tua, I'm probably not that thrilled about it. And there's nothing you can do, and I get it. They're trying to get in and trying to win. But what is the ultimate goal? Is it trying to build a championship team and figure out if Tua is your franchise quarterback of the future, or is it just winning now because Fitzpatrick won't be around in a year or two, you know, when they're really in contention to try to win something?
Remember, they have the Texans' first-round pick. So it is not out of the question that they could pull a Josh Rosen.
Oh, yeah. They could get a quarterback. There's no doubt. So, to me, Doug, if that's the case and you're thinking that way, I need to play Tua as much as possible before I decide to move on from this guy and pick another quarterback and I realize that he can't play. That's what I would rather see Tua than waste any snaps on a journeyman quarterback.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Okay, so tomorrow is the 1st of January, and we're getting back to normalcy in the 1st of January, which means just bowl games. And last night, Oklahoma blows out Florida. Florida doesn't play. You know, half their team isn't playing.
Should they have played that game, Doug, when you really think about it? I know that other kids who are healthy want to play, but my goodness, to go out there and just get manhandled.
I thought you came to college to play football. That's my thing. Like, of this, like, man, you can get hurt playing football. It is a job hazard. I do understand that. You can tell me it's a meaningless game. I could tell you that in reality, once you lose a game or two games in college football, every game is a meaningless game if you want to take it down to that. You came to college to play football. There's no promise that you're going to play football ever again in the NFL. Why wouldn't you play more football? I don't understand it. I don't get the opt-out culture. That being said, there's some bowl games today. Tomorrow is a massive, massive day. Even though it's not what it used to be in terms of the 1st of January, only four games. And the two that people care about, obviously, are the college football playoff. Notre Dame plays Alabama. Ohio State plays Clemson. And Notre Dame keeps putting themselves out there. And I do believe that Brian Kelly has done an amazing job. I don't think this thing comes back around to Notre Dame the way, like, college basketball is going to come back around now to the five-year programs are going to be the dominant programs until further notice, until some of these rules change and there's not the mass exodus to the NBA, not just one and done, but some kids going to play for the G League select team. I just think that you can't compare, you know, Wisconsin starts two 24-year-old starters. Like, those kids are going to be better than freshmen at some of the elite recruiting institutions. That said, I'm kind of this point where, like, I like Notre Dame. I like that they keep winning, that they stuck by Brian Kelly after a bad season. But at some point, you don't necessarily have to win the game against Alabama, but there's never been fear struck in the heart. Like, they'll tell you a couple years ago when Clemson won it, that was Clemson's most difficult game. That's great. There hasn't been an overtime game. They go to the college football playoff. They get annihilated. That's generally what happens.
Have to win at some point, Notre Dame?
It's
been forever, Doug. It's just, you know, I get it. I get the fan base. I get the following. I understand why people want Notre Dame to be involved. You know this prior to pandemic. It's always they love the schools that have the big followings and fans that travel, right? Those are the schools you want. But they just – it's a disappointment. It's the same over and over. When was the last time they won the national championship? Is it with Rocket Ismail?
Yeah.
I mean, I covered Rocket Ismail when he was in high school. I mean, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, if you could believe that.
Right, that means you're old.
Yes, which is just crazy. But that's the last time? Seriously, it seems inconceivable.
They have not won one since 88. But it's now it's more like now you're in the semifinal. And I think it's more, you know, getting destroyed. Like, you just can't get destroyed in these
things.
Like,
you don't belong out there, right? Like, this is a total mismatch. What are you doing here? Right. How about a football game, a hard-fought football game, and if you lose it at the end because Alabama's better, then you could go, man, that was a great game, and Alabama was better.
Yes, and they haven't, like, look, they lost, and it's been a while since they've been there, right? It has been a while since they've been there. In fairness, it was in 2012, they lost in the BCS championship, and it wasn't pretty. But it's not just that. And this is not, and you're like, Gottlieb, you went to Notre Dame, and you had to leave, and that's why you're like, no.
And that's why you're ripping on Notre Dame. Right?
I'm not ripping on Notre Dame. Like, look, Notre Dame, if you paid attention, last 4 years, 10, 12, 11, 10 wins, right? And 10 wins this year in 11 in an 11-game season, including a win over Clemson at home. And, you know, Brian Kelly has, I mean, it's really remarkable. Over the last 6 years, he's won 10 or more games five times. He had that one bad year. That said, like, look, when they played in the Cotton Bowl, they lost. When they played in the BCS Championship, they lost, and it wasn't close. They lost in the Sugar. They lost in the Fiesta. They lost in the Fiesta. They haven't won, like, a big-time bowl game. Big-time bowl game since 93 when they won the Cotton. Right? The bowl wins are the Hawaii Bowl, the Sun Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl, the Music City Bowl, the Citrus Bowl. Last year, they won the Camping World Bowl.
Very right?
They
nice.
Haven't, right? So... So the point is, like, it's one of those deals where, you know, I'm sorry, but Notre Dame beating Iowa State last year does nothing for Notre Dame to put themselves in the category where they believe and historically they should believe they belong, which is kind of that uber elite class of college football. They kind of get granted they're the guy who still gets to. Or the woman who gets to go in the club because she used to be a 10, and you're like, yeah, we let her in. Right. And then now you're like, she doesn't really belong in the club.
But you
anymore.
Know what? There's a few programs like that. It's like the Michigan thing. You know, I mean, Michigan has one shared championship since the Louisiana Purchase. I mean, let's just be honest. And yet people always put Michigan up there and Doug, It's been bare for a long time.
20 years since they won a national championship.
Right? And with Jim, that's the only one they have. Even with Bo Schembechler, their legendary coach, he never won. You know what yes. I mean? Never won a national championship. But Michigan is put up on that pedestal as well as this program, the winningest college football program. But when it's talk about winning championships and they get players, and a lot of players have gone from Michigan right to the NFL, they've had nothing but a slew. Tom Brady played there. I mean, it's a slew of players, yet they never win the big game. So Notre Dame to me and Michigan and schools like that, I get the history. I get why people like them and follow them, but they just haven't done it. And for these decades to go by, Notre Dame, 1988, it's like the Dodgers. The Dodgers won after 32 years, right, 1988? So maybe it's time for Notre Dame to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little different in terms of the Dodgers, just in that, like, look, they had gotten to Game 7s.
No, I got it. They've been
baseball.
To the World Series, yes.
They've and been to the World Series. They've yep. been a dominant team.
Maybe they've won the division 8 years in a row. I get it.
Right. You know, it's different because the way in which college football works is, end of the day, it's about reputation, right? And it's about fan base more so, and Notre Dame is there was a little bit of the Duke thing where people would cheer when Notre Dame would lose their first game or their second game, and it would eliminate any of their chances of being discussed because they weren't in a conference, and people treated Notre Dame like they were football royalty, and there was nothing in terms of wins and losses that would make you believe that, you know, whereas the other three schools. You know, Clemson hadn't won it since, 82. and they had been close. But now Clemson, now they finally won the national championship, but they're, you know, they're back. They continue to be competitive. Alabama hadn't won it in forever, but then they're back and they were competitive and they're winning multiple national championships. You know, I think Oklahoma is much in the same boat in terms of once they haven't won a college football playoff game and they haven't won a national championship for them, you know, in, what was it, almost 20 years now, right, when they had Josh Heupel there. So I think Oklahoma is in a similar boat, but Oklahoma has, you know, they haven't always gotten just eviscerated the way that, you know, we remember that Lene Kakua team that got eviscerated in the national championship game against Alabama. Like, look, you can, if you want to say you're football royalty, that's great. Now you get a shot, neutral field, good team, veteran quarterback, national semifinal against Alabama, who last time you played against them ran you off the football field to where you're like, man, we got to get this game over with quick because it's bad.
So can Notre Dame win? Do they have 1%, a Hail Mary?
Yes, of course they can win a game.
Can they win? Okay.
I think of course they can win a game. I don't know if they will. I mean, Steve Sarkisian not getting a job, I think, hurts them because – you know, whatever prep he was doing for job interviews, he's completely locked in. Like, there are things that can go your way. I mean, obviously, let's see. Let's make sure everybody gets to the football field with, you know, with the COVID-19 tests and whatever. I mean, Clemson's going without their offensive coordinator. That's crazy here before the national semifinal. Notre Dame can win, but they are a prohibitive underdog. All right, coming up next.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Doug Gottlieb, Rob Parker in for Dan and the Danettes. And it's always fun for me to have Lights Out Sean Merriman on because now he's a great dude. He's got diverse interests. There's always something unique about him, right? Like Rob, where are you? Where in the, like, let's give away some inside the Beltway secrets. Where are you right now?
I'm in my living room in West LA.
Okay. I'm in my bedroom in Newport Beach. Sean Merriman, where are you?
Guadalajara.
Why are you in Guadalajara?
Guadalajara?
Yeah, you know, I thought I'd get out for a little bit. I got some friends in town, just maybe grab some dinner, then head out to Cancun right after. So, enjoying this little bit of free time I have.
What is it like in Guadalajara right now?
Shut down. It's fine. It's just for me, it's about, you know, whenever I get free time, I have to have a change of scenery, right? Because we've all been locked down in Los Angeles for months. Right. And, you know, it's the same routine. It's wake up, gym, work, home. You know, it's the same routine. So for me, in order to keep any kind of sanity that I have left, I always go for a change of scenery.
I'm with you. I've been going to Vegas just even for one night just to get a change of scenery from L.A., and it's not too far, you know, and whatnot. But, Sean, so are you a world traveler? Where's the best place you've been? Just curious.
You know what? My favorite place in the world is probably south of France. I love, you know, Saint-Tropez a whole lot, man. I've been there probably about 7 or 8 times, and I just really enjoy going out there. I love the weather, especially when they got big events, and you got the big Formula One races that's out there, and it's, you know, the World Music Awards I've been to, you know, 3 times. So it's always a good time out there.
Best place you've ever been, Rob Parker?
I you know what? I've been, well, the Antarctica trip was fascinating, but it's Australia. When you get off the plane in Australia, you feel like you're in another world. It's a 14-hour nonstop flight from Los Angeles, and you feel literally, you know, they, you know, call it down under, but you feel like you're in another world. You're so far away from everything. And it's 14 hours over nothing but water to get there. It's incredible. And I'm planning a trip for next December to go again because the first time I went, which was back in the 90s, I didn't get to go to the West Coast, Perth, and that part of Australia. So I'm going to go back and then go to the West Coast and check that out.
But okay, it was fascinating.
Rob, by the way, that's on my list next.
Yeah. Oh, Australia's you got to do it. Got to do it.
Australia is okay. So, but I guess here's a question, and we will get to sports, but this is way more interesting.
Yes.
This is way more interesting to me. How much time do you take off work to do that?
When I go coming up,
yeah,
I'll take off. I'll only go for 9 days. I'll just go. You know, with 2 weekends wrapped around the week off. That's all I'll need to go. I'll rough it out. I don't need 2 or 3 weeks to go to make a trip like that. Even Antarctica was only like a 6 day trip or something like that. That's what it was, or about a week. That's all I need. I'm not trying to go for 3 weeks and all that and experience everything. I just want to go and see as much as I can while I'm alive. So that's the mode I'm in.
I saw so many things in my 20s playing basketball, and I literally haven't traveled much since. And I think travel is going to explode the second people get the vaccine. Don't you guys? Like the second you get a chance to say go, like I'm off. It'll remind me of one time in high school, okay, my college basketball coach, John McLeod's like, you should go run track, keep that speed up. So I went to run track after my high school senior season, and I ran the 220, right? And I remember being at the curve of the 220, and I was in first. And I was like, I'm out, I'm going. And then all of a sudden I get to the home stretch, and dudes boat raced me. But the point was that when that gun went off, I took off like a shot. And that's exactly, I mean, Sean, that's what you're going to do, right? The first chance somebody says you can go to France, you're off, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I think everybody should, right? Because you always take that stuff for granted until they tell you you have to stay at home. You know, you know it's there. It's almost like you know, I'm not a beach person, right? I go to the beach once in a while. I'll stay maybe 25 or 30 minutes from there. I live, and I'll probably go to the beach a couple times a year. But all of a sudden, they tell you, hey, by the way, you got to stay home. And you're like, damn, I wish I could go to the beach right now. Right.
Right.
So I think that's what's going to happen with everybody. And I know me for sure, every time I get a chance to go and travel, I'm out. But I think now more than ever, now that people were forced to stay home and they can't do certain things, you're right, man. I think they're going to take off and be gone.
All right. Let's get to the other reason we're having you on is the NFL. Having played in the league and played at such a high level in the league, how much should we factor in wins and losses and put on the quarterback's shoulders?
Well, you know, this is the thing. You know, it's such a quarterback-driven league now. It wasn't always like that in the past, right? Even the times I played, you could have some great quarterbacks, but they didn't run the whole entire team. Now, in the way the game's changed over the last 10 years, you really start to got to look at the wins and losses being only on the quarterback's shoulders because they control everything. And they have so much power within, like, some of these great quarterbacks. Let's take Patrick Mahomes, for example. He has so much power within the organization that he controls it, right? I mean, he's the CEO of that organization. So the reason why I say you take the wins and losses on the quarterback's shoulders because if a wide receiver's not playing well, he's dropping balls, he's not running his routes right, he's not doing certain things, you go upstairs, you say, hey, I don't want this guy here, or he shouldn't be starting. And guess what? That guy's not going to be starting. So you have to, you know, take everything with a grain of salt now and put more responsibility and more pressure on the quarterback because it really relies on how he plays and what he does.
Sean, how surprised are you that, speaking of Patrick Mahomes, that it appears Aaron Rodgers will win the MVP and the year that he put together, he still has one more game, 44 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, and the best quarterback rating. How surprised are you that he looks like he beat out Mahomes for MVP?
Not surprised at all. And I think the only people surprised is the Green Bay Packers. You know, like, right. You go out and you draft a quarterback. Aaron Rodgers had all the motivation this year to play extremely well. And I love it when a player has the ball in his court, right? Because you go out, you draft a guy, you basically telling Aaron Rodgers, like, hey, we're planning on moving on from you at some point, and now you go out and have one of the best years of his career. And I love that because now he can go to organization and say, you know what, I'm out or else. So now he calls all the shots, he dictates his own future, if he wants to stay there, if he wants to go, however it wants to happen, because that's the message you send when you go out and you draft a quarterback as high as they did, to eventually replace Aaron Rodgers well before his time is even up.
I want to just follow up real quick. How crazy is it to both of you guys that they never drafted a skilled player in the first round during Aaron Rodgers' entire career in Green Bay? How crazy is that?
It's beyond crazy to me. Because look at the year, and don't get me wrong, to me, I think Devontae Adams is probably top two or three wide receivers in the National Football League. So he came on as doing extraordinary things. But you didn't really give Aaron Rodgers a whole lot early on. I mean, they went out and got Mercedes Lewis. They put a couple other pieces. But you didn't go out and get Antonio Brown. You didn't go out and get a big stud and say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, we're going to help you out some. You're talking about a guy who continuously does things himself, and he's been doing it in that organization for so long. And that's why, and I want to bring it back to the point when I said, that's why I'm even more baffled that they go out and draft a guy that's behind them. You got all these other positions to fill, and you go out and draft the guy, and now he's had his best year, and now they're going to have a problem on their hands going forward, regardless of how Aaron Rodgers said it publicly. They're going to have a problem going forward because they're going to have to make some real decisions.
I could not disagree with you guys more. Couldn't disagree with you guys more. Like, look, Aaron Rodgers is 37 years old. Jordan Love is, everyone knows, he's a prospect. He's a project. He's 2 years away. And in 2 years, I mean, it's reasonable to think that Aaron Rodgers might not be the same quarterback. And you have to prepare for that day, especially if you're drafting in the 20s. When you have Aaron Rodgers, you're never going to be drafting in the top 15. Okay, you're just not. Okay, so you're not going to get, you'd have to move heaven and earth to move up to get a quarterback in the draft. And, like, look, Jordan Love is not what Aaron Rodgers was as a prospect, but this is how it worked, where they went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, maybe to Jordan Love. And if it doesn't work, if Jordan Love isn't any good, as long as he never plays, nobody's ever going to know, and he'll retain some of that value. And, like, we can sit here and go, we don't love their wide receivers, or they need to, who'd they need to add? They won 13 games last year. They're going to win 13 games this year. They're going to have home field advantage throughout, and they believe in their evaluation, right? Like, look, there's a reason.
Doug, I hear that. The only thing is, they got to the NFC Championship game last year and got annihilated.
Agreed.
So my only point is,
taken a defensive player because they couldn't stop the run. It's fair.
That's the only thing that can help Aaron Rodgers this year.
You don't think they had, and then they just picked up, I know it's very late, they just picked up Snacks Harrison.
Right.
You know, and all he's got to, and it's just, can he stop the run in that one game? Which, by the way, against the Tennessee Titans, the team that runs the football, they showed they can stop the run this past weekend.
They kept Derrick Henry under 100 yards for the first time in 9 road games. Right.
Right. And I mean, and look, they drafted A.J. Dillon in the second round. People are like, why are you drafting a running back in the second round? Well, it's because, one, look at how well he played this weekend. Two, Aaron Jones' contract is up. He signed with Drew Rosenhaus. He wants to get paid. And everyone who covers the sport knows what you don't want to do is that big, long-term second running back contract, or let somebody else pay that. And if he doesn't want to play ball and take a reasonable salary. So I think the Packers are setting themselves up to be competitive for the next 10 years, not just for 1 year. And, they're the best team in the NFC.
Yeah, but I think you're speaking from the organization standpoint. But
yes.
I understand that part, but I'm also telling you that as a player.
Yes.
As a player, you know, you don't draft a guy that high. Now, if they've seen a guy that's fifth or sixth or seventh round, and he got some talent, maybe Aaron Rodgers go down, he can step in for him and do something, that's fine. But you brought him in to say, you know what, we are going to be done with you soon. Right, I mean, if they want to sit a guy 1 or 2 years and they know he's going to come in and be a starter in 1 or 2 years because he has the talent to do so, and you know your starting quarterback can't get it done, I understand completely from the organization standpoint. But to do what they did and expect Aaron Rodgers to go out there and play miraculously every single time, he's going to have a lot of pull and a lot of power here coming up here shortly, and the organization is going to have to make a decision because that doesn't sit well with players. Not just players, but anybody. If someone comes in your position, in your job, and
there's no getting rid of him for the next 2 years, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers, he has two more years where financially, it would cripple the franchise. They're not getting rid of him. He knows it, right? So I understand that on some level you could sit there and go.
Are you going to sit a guy for four? Who drafts someone that high to sit him for 4 years? No one does that.
For 3 years. That's exactly what the Green Bay Packers did with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but they didn't move up. Like my only thing is, they didn't move up to go get a quarterback at that point. Aaron Rodgers fell in their lap. And here's the other part. But you just went to the NFC Championship game.
Yes.
My point is, it's great that you've had Aaron Rodgers. It's great that he's going to have three MVPs. It's great that you've won the NFC North all these times. But the Packers with Aaron Rodgers should have won more than one Super Bowl.
Okay, but we can't go back to what they did.
So I don't care about 3 years from now. They should have been thinking about, we have Aaron Rodgers.
We still have
a chance.
You do have a chance. And you look, a lot of people went crazy. You draft a wide receiver. Okay, the first thing is, all the first round wide receivers were gone at that point in time. And by the way, 16 up until this year, and this year was a historically good wide receiver draft. Over the previous 4 years, the 19 first round draft picks that were drafted in the first round, 16 of them were busts. It's a really hard position because it's so different in the NFL than these spread offenses. Okay, secondly, if you want to tell me that they were close last year, I agree with you. And they had to get better. I agree with you. They have gotten better. And people go, you should draft a wide receiver. If you draft a wide receiver, that hurts the development of Marcus Valdes-Scantling and of some of these other guys who have developed. And those guys have gotten better. And the team is, they're the best team in the NFC. I don't know what people want, right? They're the best team in the NFC, and they protected it. Watch the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. Okay, look at Ben Roethlisberger. Look, I know he played really well Sunday. But what has everybody said? Man, Ben Roethlisberger looks shot. Looks shot. And you know what the Green Bay Packers don't want to be? They don't want to be the Pittsburgh Steelers, where at some point in time, Aaron Rodgers is going to lose it, and you want to have a guy there who's been studying, been preparing, who you can throw in, and there won't be this massive drop-off. That's what happened in New England when they drafted Garoppolo, and this is to Sean, to your point, where Brady went in and goes, hey, man, him or me, and they sent Garoppolo packing, which could very well happen with Jordan Love. But again, the plan was smart, and that's what the Packers are executing.
But Doug, one thing about this, who can't get better when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback? You're talking about busts and these other, which one of these busts, wide receivers that were drafted, had Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback? I just feel like over the last decade or so, you know, they've been relying on Aaron Rodgers so much to be Aaron Rodgers, to go out and do things on his own, that they're willing to risk and sacrifice do anything bigger for the organization because everything is on him. Like I said, if they wanted to draft a guy in the fifth or sixth round or third round, you know, later on, and like Rob just said, fell in his lap, no problem. I understand
right.
that. But you do the things you're doing, you're saying that, hey, you fix this. And mind you, one of the main reasons why they drafted Aaron Rodgers is because he kept getting hurt. He kept having these injuries, you know, back to back. He never really finished the season healthy. That's one of the main factors they did it. So they're basically saying, hey, these injuries keep piling up or whatever is going on, we're going to have a guy here to replace you. It backfired on them. And I'm not saying it backfired on them in a way of them winning. Obviously, they're a great team, but it's going to backfire on them at the end of the day.
Sean, enjoy Guadalajara.
Yes.
Have a happy
new
year. By the way, everybody
Happy New Year, Scott. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Stay safe. Don't drink and drive, man. Be responsible.
Yeah, and download the Lights Out podcast. It is excellent, and Sean knows so many people, not just from the MMA world, but from the clothing design world. I mean, the dude is a world traveler. It's outstanding.
I wouldn't mess with that guy. He's in the bare knuckle fighting. Can you imagine that?
That's the guy that you go. I'm with Sean.
I'm hanging out with Sean, right?
Sean Merriman. Happy New Year to you, Sean. Sean Merriman joining us live from Guadalajara.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
This is the Dan Patrick Show. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz AMG, driving performance. Alongside Rob Parker, I'm Doug Gottlieb. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year. Hopefully 21 will be better than 20. Does not have, that is not a high bar to climb, right?
Right. I was going to say, we'll take almost anything. If we can get outside, go to a ball game and sit next to your buddies, right? Or take the family on vacation, Doug. Anything like that will be much better than what we had.
Okay, so I guess this is like a legit question to you. What's the first sporting event that's back full stadium?
I say the NFL next September.
Really?
Say baseball will have some this summer. We'll get fans in the stands. I don't know if it'll be full, but I think by September we'll have, you know, full. We're all in again.
Well, September for sure, but I think it'll be sooner than that. Go the extra mile.
You think baseball will have like full stadiums? No, I'm asking. Come on.
I know
what that was.
Tampa's never going to have a full stadium.
Right. That's why they were able to excel last year, because they were used to playing with no crowd. You know,
Correct.
It was nothing different for them.
Correct. Go the extra mile in your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win in Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. To enter and get official rules, visit foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com by January 24th, Mercedes-Benz vans. I think the Final Four, I don't know if they put 75,000 in the Dome in Indy, but I do think... Okay. Because journalists, I don't know if you know this, we're like in the third tier, the third wave of vaccines that come out.
Right.
We'll be able to get. Now, there are six weeks in between when you get the initial shot and when you get the second shot. And that's how, so it's not truly effective until you get the second shot. But my guess would be that much like they're doing in Buffalo, they're going to be able to, they're going to be able to test people more often. People will get the vaccine. People will have immunity because they will have already had it. And there'll be a way in which you can prove, you know, whether you have to prove that you have the, what's it called? The antibodies, or prove that you had the vaccine. I don't know. I feel like April is that time that everybody's saying we'll start to come out of it. And that would be the first big sporting event. Maybe I'm crazy because it's indoors and maybe it'll be the Masters, but I think that's the time of year.
Yeah. I did cover the World Series this year. I was in Arlington at the new stadium and, you know, they took your temperature when you went in and they only allowed 12,000 people in, and it was controlled and it was fine. You know, I didn't feel awkward at all. People had their mask on, and I just think, indoors, I think people are going to be, and then I wonder, even if they allow you to come, Doug, do people sell out? Are there still people who say, excuse me, I'm going to wait a little longer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be in a bandbox with 75,000 other people. I want to go, but I'm going to wait this one out. You think people will do that?
Yes, I do think there will be people that will do that. I absolutely. But I also think there's an overwhelming majority of people that will. There'll be the same number of people who will have gotten the vaccine or have had it and have the antibodies. And then there's a section of people that have been, I don't want to say like deniers or anti-maskers, but we're kind of a divided country on all things. And
when did something that's medical and science become, you know, I don't know. I've always found that to
since
be
when
weird.
Did science become like, have you not no, been no, paying no. attention when, to global warming?
No, but I'm just like, but
this is what politicians do, but right? This is what people do. This is what business people
but
do.
But how
is,
many people have to get sick or die for people to realize like it's one thing. Doug, don't get me wrong. I get it. Everybody's not. But these aren't fake numbers. These aren't like people aren't. Or this isn't being fake. This is happening. Like,
yes.
What would you have to see to tell you that it isn't real? I just saw a couple minutes ago, Dr. Drew, who I guess said that he didn't believe that it was fake or something.
Yeah, he's got it.
He
got hit pretty hard too with it.
This is what I'm saying. Like, these really? I don't know. Okay.
I don't know, but you, I mean, like, look, scientists have been telling us for years that that the earth is not happy with us, and
right.
You know, like we now the wording has changed and some of the stances have been softened, but like the science thing's kind of been out there for a long time.
No,
so
I got it.
But I would say, when was the time which there was a global pandemic where a portion of the country led by politicians denied its danger? The answer would be 2020. There's your answer. When has it happened before? I don't know. I wasn't around during the Spanish flu, but I think this was a unique year, and we had unique leadership. Is probably the best way.
You're being kind, and let's just leave it at that.
We can't. All right, let's get to. I want to get to this. Boy, the NBA is. I'm excited to have it back, and there's. You know, I'm watching last night, and Atlanta is playing Brooklyn, and no one is playing defense. And Brooklyn
145.
It was great, though. I mean, that was good hoop, right? There's just so much offensive talent. I do like what Atlanta's done, you know, to bring some veterans in, some guys that we think can play some defense. Trae Young doesn't shoot the ball well from three, but, you know, the Brooklyn Nets end up surviving the Atlanta Hawks. If you just watch that game, you're like, wow, there's no defense. But if you look at the scores of some of these other games, just blowout after blowout after blowout, right? The Heat beat the Bucks, but that's after the Bucks had beaten the Heat the night before by like 50.
Right, 47, exactly, yep.
The Celtics beat the Grizzlies, and we should point out that Ja Morant didn't play because he badly sprained his ankle the night before. That's a 19-point game. The Hornets beat the Mavericks. Remember, the Mavericks were the team that were up 50 on the Clippers. That's the only game they've won this year. The Hornets win by, 19 points. The Spurs and Lakers, of course, that's notable because Becky Hammon became the first even acting female head coach when Greg Popovich got ejected. The Clippers blow out the Blazers, and those were mild blowouts compared to the night before. Why do you think there's so many blowouts in the NBA?
It's very interesting. I find the NBA at current state, I know things will get better, but unwatchable for the most part. And Doug, you're a basketball guy. You played the game at a high level. I love basketball. I've been covering the league for a long time. And it's hard for me to watch these games where it seems like, I don't know if the players are all the way into it. Is this preseason? There was a couple of graphics put up on the Clipper game the other night, which showed that 25% of the games so far have been decided by 20 points or more. And then TNT also had a graphic which talked about how many games in NBA history had been, you know, by where teams won by 50 or more. And last year, there were only two such games in that category, and in the first week, we almost had two of those games eclipsing that or matching that number when Dallas won by 51 and Milwaukee won by 47, almost. So I don't know if it's they rushed the guys back too early, the guys aren't really into it and don't really, you know, care, and it's going to be a month or so before they really feel like they want to play. I don't know. I would love to hear what you think, because you watch it and this is your sport. You're closer to it. It just, I'm not a guy who's going to watch a 25 or 30 point blowout. I'm going to look for a Golden Girls rerun if the game gets out of hand.
All right. I would stop you at the Golden Girls rerun. I'll stop at the goal. I think there is twofold of what took place. I don't think this is a player revolt, but the players, especially the ones, the Lakers, and maybe to a lesser extent, the Heat, like that is a quick turnaround. But you have it on both sides. Some teams hadn't played since March, right?
Right,
some teams
didn't go to the bubble, right?
Right. Neither, and there. So there is no perfect, you know, there is no perfect way to start the NBA, right? Because you had to start it now, and I think that leadership understood you got to start it now because you had to get those Christmas Day games in. For
what'd they say, $500 million or something extra, or they would have lost out if they didn't?
Yes. So this is one of those begrudgingly going to work, teams trying to manage it, no one trying to get hurt. But again, this is part of it is where the league is, where it's become, it's the pendulum swings, right? Where sometimes you have too much, the power of the owners or the NBA, they call them governors, and the front offices is too great. The pendulum has swung back the other way where I think it's too much in, you know, labor has too much power and it just does. Or the players, they're just games are like, man, I don't really want to, I can't go. You don't know who's going to play. Like why? It's not just that the games aren't that much fun to watch because there's no fans. It's you don't know who's going to play. Right? Like last night, LeBron and Anthony Davis decided to play. But the game before, Anthony Davis basically no-showed and LeBron didn't play. Right. So that's only a micro. You got KD and Kyrie that KD hadn't played in a year and a half, and his second or third game in, he's taken it off.
It was his third game, right? They won the first two, and then he didn't play.
Same thing with Kyrie. So you're like, look, if you're not that into it, how can I get that into it as a fan? And I think it's good. It, no matter how good it ultimately gets once we get to March and April, and I think that, and like anybody who's like thinks I'm a hater on the league or the players, dude, these guys are so much more talented than, or skilled in many ways, more with the basketball than without, than previous generations. The shooting is obscene. The depth of talent on some of these teams, they've finally gotten it spread out to where you got two stars on many of these teams. Some aren't as good as others, but you do, the days of the, when you get three or four stars in this league where it's all spread out, it's too much, right? So you have some parity there. You got so many good things, but God, it's a hard watch when the games are so non-competitive and you don't know who's going to play in a given night.
I agree. And that's the other part. I'm against the whole rest thing from a standpoint. Now, people aren't buying tickets or whatnot, but Doug, I think it's very unfair. I don't have any kids, but if my son wanted to go to a Laker game and see LeBron in person, you know, on Christmas or whatever the day is, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, this is where the uproar is that he didn't go to Memphis, and maybe it was three or four days before Christmas. You remember that? And,
yes, I remember.
And that was Christmas presents for a lot of kids. You know, like that was, they're coming to town, I'm going to see LeBron in person. And not only did he not play, he didn't even show up. He didn't even travel to Memphis. And a lot of people felt jilted, like they got cheated. And I don't think that's right. I just don't. When people get hurt, Doug, we buy tickets. I understand that. If you're telling me he's on the disabled list or the injured list or whatever you want to call it, I can accept that, right? Things happen. People get hurt. But when I hear, oh, he's resting today, I don't want to hear that. I want to be able, unless I can get a refund on my tickets, I'm not happy with that, and I don't like it. I think it's a bad thing. I know Pop kind of started it. And then once LeBron started taking days off, people followed the leader, and then other guys started doing it, and it became a problem. And even ESPN and ABC balked at the league. Am I right, Doug?
I don't think there's any question. The TNT is not happy about it either. It's bad. I mean, like, look, there's a multitude of factors. I mean, look, you've priced out many of your, you know, blue collar fans anyway, right? So as much as I agree with you, you know, the kid in Memphis, many of the kids in Memphis were affluent kids. So like, you know, like, look, that kid gets plenty of presents, right? So we've, the idea of pricing out your, you know, your lower to middle income fans is a problem. And it's not just the player's problem. That's the owner's problems as well as, you know, there's everybody's trying to make a buck anywhere possible, and that's going to get worse, not get better. But yeah, I mean, like, look, those are the consumers. And anyone who's ever been to a game and seen that one magical moment, it's like, why do we go to baseball games as adults when, you know, it's like, boys, like, well, because when I was a kid, you know, Randy Myers from the Mets threw me a ball when I went to a Dodgers Mets game. Right. Like, I remember that.
I was in Shea Stadium. I was working, but I covered game six of the 1986 World Series. My first World Series I ever covered, Doug, when the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs. I'll never forget that moment and what it felt inside Shea Stadium. You know what I mean? Like, you don't let go of those things. I agree with you.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app, at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.